Okay. Right, so I'm going to talk about closed quantum systems, and in particular, the issue of what happens near and perhaps at the phase transition between many body localization and thermalization, which is a new type of quantum phase transition that we don't know much about, but I think it's very interesting and challenging topic. Okay, so this is about the dynamics of volume law entanglement. So what I've drawn here, this is my cooler box, inside of which I put a many-body quantum system fully isolated from the environment, although I might classically drive it with a periodic drive. Okay, and so I have inside of here a quantum system, and it's in a state which is time-dependent, and it has a unitary operator which takes it forward one period of time, U, a local unitary. And we're going to be interested in ultimately taking the thermodynamic limit, although it's nice to discuss finite volume first before taking that limit. Okay, so the dynamics is just this, okay, unitary time evolution. And although I'm a condensed matter person, I'm not interested in the ground state, and I don't want to go anywhere near it. I'm interested in highly excited states. And in particular, my favorite temperature to work at is infinite temperature. So if we have a spin system, if we have a system with a finite Hilbert space, we can just work at infinite temperature, and all the physics I'm going to tell you about basically happens there. There's nothing. So it's a convenient place to work. I want to be working at an energy or entropy that, if the system thermalizes, corresponds to high temperatures with volume law entanglement. Okay. Now there is a very interesting special case of this where, so I've chosen some unit of time so that if there's a periodicity in the drive, the period is one. But it could be an isolated quantum system with a time-independent Hamiltonian, local Hamiltonian. And then U would just be e to the, I guess conventionally there's a minus sign there, e to the minus ih. And in this case, you would have an extensive conserved energy. In general, we're talking about a system that has no extensive conserved quantities. No symmetries, only locality and unitarity. Although it might also have some additional conservation laws or symmetries. Okay. And let me restrict my attention today to the case where U, or H in this case, are not translationally invariant. Although there is a very interesting discussion about whether you can have many-body localization in translationally invariant systems. I'm not going to get into that today. Okay. And so a nice example, which is the one, the examples that are most thoroughly studied, are spin a half chain with, so this is very challenging things to investigate. Most theoretical approaches don't help. What we do is we try to theorize, make up stories, and then the main calculational tool for investigating this is just brute force exact diagonalization, or time evolution of the Hamiltonian, just absolute brute force. And so size systems you can do are very modest, and we want to probe large length scales, and so basically we work in one dimension so that we can get to the biggest length scale with the smallest Hilbert space, and then you use spin a half because that's the smallest Hilbert space you can have per site, although you could go down to some anion with a quantum dimension less than 2, but there's additional baggage associated with that, so nobody's really gotten any advance from doing that yet, really, on these issues. Okay, so we have a spin a half chain with either random or quasi-periodic. Local terms. So typically a local field on the spins, which would be either random or quasi-periodic. And quasi-periodic is nice in one dimension because non-interacting particles in one dimension in quasi-periodic potentials on lattices. So quasi-periodic potential, I mean, you have a lattice and then you put on a periodic potential which is incommensurate with the lattice. Quantum particles on such chains do have a single particle localization transition. And that, when you turn on interactions, turns into a many-body localization transition. So that's a nice case to work with. And one of the very interesting issues is, let me not get ahead of myself. Okay, so such systems, we have to our knowledge, there are two generic behaviors for the long time dynamics of such systems that, you know, these two are well documented, non-controversial. There may be other generic behaviors that intermediate between the two, but the two are, of course, thermalization. And this is the standard assumption when you do statistical mechanics. You have a closed system. What does it do at long times? It goes to equilibrium. Right? That's what you assume. And that's what we call it. When that's true, we call that thermalization. And in this case, the eigenstates of U have thermal volume law entanglement. Actually, let me just draw it over here. If we have a subsystem, so here's our full system. The subsystem has volume V. The surface has area A, right? And so the entanglement of this subsystem with the rest of the system in an eigenstate of this system will go as S going as V times the equilibrium thermal energy density associated with this system at thermal equilibrium, right? And here, the system is a bath for itself. That's the essential point here. We've taken a closed system, we've taken the thermodynamic limit. Is that system a bath for itself, which can thermally equilibrate its subsystems in the thermal phase? The answer is yes. Okay. Now, what does it mean to be a bath, right? So what does it mean to be a bath? Any ideas? What did you learn in class? Right? So what you learned in class was a bath, you exchange energy with it, or you exchange particles with it. But that's not the most important thing, as you guys should know at this workshop. The most important thing, and you don't even need it, right? So I can have a unitary system which has no conserved energy, it has no conserved particles, so what does it mean to exchange energy and particles with a bath when there are no energy and no particles, right? But what is a bath? A bath is something that a subsystem or some small system coupled to it can get entangled with without limit. There's no limit to how the bath can sort of absorb, facilitate whatever entanglement without constraint. Right? And so that's what a bath is. It's about entanglement, right? And you don't need anything else. So this is one possibility, and the other possibility is localization. Many-body localization. And here, the eigenstates have area law entanglement. So S goes with A times a localization length times the thermal energy density at equilibrium. So this way I can define a localization length is right, so we can draw here near the boundary some distance the localization length, and so this subsystem in an eigenstate is entangled with the stuff outside over a distance of the localization length. Okay. And so I'm just going to abbreviate this, of course, many body localization, which is abbreviated MBL. So MBL, let me just list some of its properties. First of all, GTH is false. Eigenstate thermalization hypothesis is false. System is not a bath. Entanglement spreads at long time as log time. Eigenstates, well, let me write this phrase here. So we can have what we call localization protected order. Right. So in the many-body localized phase, the eigenstates of U are a lot like ground states. And so they have properties. They can have properties like ground states. So even though we're in one dimension at infinite temperature, the eigenstates could have magnetic order, magnetic long-range order, or they could have some topological order. That can happen at high temperatures because they're protected against the thermal fluctuations by the localization. There are no thermal fluctuations. There's no bath. There's no temperature. So you're sort of at infinite temperature in a nominal sense, but not, there's no bath there. So in some sense, there's really no temperature. What else was I going to say? Okay, so those are the two main cases, and then we have other special cases of interest, which as far as we know are fine-tuned, although it may be that, generic? Generic, what I mean is a behavior that is robust against arbitrary small local perturbations that preserve locality and unitarity. So you can add randomness, you can just any small perturbations. And so that's what I mean by generic. So I mean phases that are stable against such small changes. So the other special cases which there's what I call traditional integrable systems, which is a big subject of study.
So can I just ask a question about the symmetry breaking? I mean, can you define
Sure.
what it means exactly? I mean, so it somehow the
same as it means in the ground state. Right? You know what when a ground state breaks symmetry, you know what that's like, right?
Well, to define things, usually I have to either take some order of limits or put an infinitesimal field on or something.
Well,
like
don't
this.
Do it with an infinitesimal field because we're not at equilibrium, but measure correlation functions in the eigenstate.
That's what you want to do.
Yeah, measure correlation functions in the eigenstate. Yeah. So if you have an eigenstate, right, you You need to do it. You need to do it in a way that does not use a Hamiltonian in an infinitesimal field, because we're not at equilibrium. Those tools don't make sense. But you can define what it means to be in a symmetry broken state by the correlation functions measured in the eigenstate, right?
It's hard to get for
all ground state type of orderings, you can do it that way, right? Do you know of an exception?
It's hard to get to an eigenstate, right?
I mean, oh, yeah, absolutely. We should never talk about eigenstates. So when you're doing many-body quantum physics, I didn't put a pure state here. I didn't put an eigenstate here. I put a mixed state, right? And that's all there is, right? Eigenstates and pure states are just tools for talking about. Right, there are no eigenstates or pure states in nature. Right.
So does the symmetry breaking make sense? I mean, dynamically. Suppose I start with a state which
has
symmetry.
You have to prepare a state where the symmetry is broken.
Suppose I prepare a state where it's not broken, and I let it evolve.
It'll stay not broken. But that's always true.
Well, usually you have coarsening or something like that, but that kind of requires...
If a system thermalizes, yeah. Right. In a system that thermalizes, yes, you could start in a state that doesn't break the symmetry, and with time, it will try to break the symmetry. It'll never actually really break it.
Yeah.
Right, but it'll establish longer and longer range correlations by coarsening. Yeah, that's right. But here, stuff is frozen, so that's not going to happen.
So the symmetry breaking means more like you have a memory of it.
I should have said that.
You have a memory of lots of things.
So this is a glass, right? This thermalizes, this is a glass, right? And what's its important property? Right. It's not a bath, but it's not a bath, and the system is... a memory, right? It can remember its initial conditions. And, that's what it means to not thermalize. You can remember your initial conditions. It's the information about the local information about your local initial conditions is still there locally.
But they can remember things where there's no symmetry. Huh?
Yeah, it can do that as well. Yeah. Right. No, this is a parenthetical remark, the MBL phase is interesting because for lots of reasons. But, as a thing with possible utility, this is probably the most important thing, that it's a memory, right? And of the types of memories you can store, if you choose the right kind of system, you could store something in terms of symmetry breaking or some topological order, right? But that's just, those are special cases. Your generic such system doesn't have any symmetries or any, it won't have any such localization protected order. But I'm just mentioning that just to say it's a subject which is interesting. But I'm not going to return to that today, unless I get more questions about it, in which case I'm happy to continue.
Actually, is that the fact that it's a memory compatible with the fact that you have Langevin stress like log D?
Yeah. Well, the entanglement does not go to thermal equilibrium.
But if the entanglement keeps on growing at the empty memory...
Okay, so first of all, So, entanglement spreads as log T from a generic low entanglement initial state, except the eigenstates, which have area law entanglement, they're eigenstates, and so the entanglement doesn't spread. Right, I'm going to say a little bit more about this spreading. There's a prefactor in front of here, which depends on the initial condition.
But do you mean it's only a memory if you have an eigen? No.
No. So in general, the entanglement spreading will entangle your local degrees of freedom with ones further away. And in order to recover the full information, you will have to do some spin echo type procedure to disentangle. But they're getting entangled in a rather simple way, so that spin echo can remove them, in principle.
But the symmetry breaking will still have a memory even for infinite times. I mean, right? There's a conserved
point. Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna go on. Okay, so other special cases, what I was gonna say. So there's these traditional integrable systems. Now I'm putting the word traditional on it because the many-body localized phase in many circumstances is also a new type of integrable system, right? And I'll say a little bit about that. But the traditional integrable systems are, there's a big, enormous literature there, and they include, conformal field theories of 1+1 dimensions. And these, the question of whether these are robust to small generic perturbations, they have special properties. They neither fully thermalize nor are they localized. There's some intermediate behavior, probably fine-tuned and not robust to small perturbations, but this is an interesting open question. Can that really be established, or is there some KAM-like theorem for these guys where there's a domain of stability of their special properties? Okay, but again, this I'm not going to talk about today. Okay, so again, that's something I'm mentioning, but I'd like to leave aside. And then the other special case I want to mention, which I am going to talk about, is what we believe is a critical point between the two phases. ETH to MDM. So we have, there's a phase transition between this behavior and this behavior, which is a quantum phase transition of a type. It's not a ground state quantum phase transition. It's not a thermodynamic phase transition. It is a phase transition where thermodynamics breaks down. Right, so here thermodynamics applies to the long-time dynamics of the system. Here it doesn't. Right, and so it's a dynamical phase transition. It's a phase transition in the properties of the eigenstates, but it's invisible to equilibrium thermodynamics and statistical mechanics. Okay, and so let me just draw the phase diagram here. Okay, so I'm putting MBL on this side. ETH on this side. Okay, and this parameter here will be some hopping and interactions divided by, I'm going to say disorder, but when I say disorder, I include the strength of this quasi-periodic potential, so we'll nominally call that disorder, that strength disorder. And so when you have, your random fields and no interactions between the sites, the system is localized, but when you turn these up, it thermalizes. Now, this can be non-monotonic. You go to strong interactions, you can actually sometimes bring the localization back. That's also an interesting topic, but let's just think of it coming from, in this way, right? So I'm not saying it's ETH all the way to infinity here in all models like this. That's not necessarily true. Okay. Now, for the system without any conservation laws, when it thermalizes, so if you have a system with absolutely no conservation laws, when it thermalizes, there are no Lagrange multipliers in the statistical mechanics. There's no temperature, no chemical potential, no nothing. So there's really just one parameter here, right? I can't draw a phase diagram. But if we have a Hamiltonian, I could, and I could put the energy density along here. So this E is total energy over volume, right? For the system without an energy density, it's zero, right? But if we have a Hamiltonian, then we could draw a phase diagram here. And typically what happens is the phase boundary goes like this, that when you, this point here, which is infinite temperature, corresponds to the highest entropy, the highest density of states. And that's where the thermalization is strongest, and it gets weaker as you go away. So here, if you go to low temperatures, it's more localized at low temperatures, thermalizing at higher temperatures. And there is a temperature inside of this phase. Once you leave this phase, that's why I write energy density on this axis, because if I wrote temperature on this axis, that would be a little misleading in talking about the many-body localized phase where there really isn't a temperature. Okay. Right. So I guess entanglement spread in the many-body localized phase has been discussed, but let me just say a little bit about it, because probably there's a point there which I suspect hasn't been emphasized. So there's FMBL phase. This is fully. So this means all eigenstates are localized, right? And so if we're over here, on this side of here, right, we're in the many-body localized phase at all energies. So all eigenstates are localized, right? There's a many-body localized phase down here where at this energy it's localized, but at other energies it's thermalizing, right? And so that's a more difficult region. So I'm going to talk about the fully many-body localized phase, which is over here, and we're approaching the phase transition, say, from this side, like that. There are localized conserved operators. And if we're talking a spin model, they're basically dressed spins. They're pseudo spins. So we call them tau. So tau I z. So localized near site I is a pseudo spin whose z component is conserved and commutes with the Hamiltonian. Right? And this is the sense in which the fully many body localized phase is an integrable system. Its integrals of motion are localized. So these commute, and they commute with each other. So tau I z, tau j z. And the tau I is localized within a localization length of site I when tau I is written in terms of the bare operators. Right? So we have some model in real space with some degrees of freedom at certain locations, right? And this pseudo spin, which is the conserved quantity, can be expressed in terms of those operators as products. And when it's written, it's localized within the localization length. And then that localization length will diverge as we approach this phase transition, we believe, right? Okay, so we have this phase transition here. I'm calling it a critical point, right? We don't have a theory of this phase transition. Is there a field theory of it? Is there concepts of universality classes? Probably yes. We're sort of assuming that, trying to build on that assumption, just because that's all we know. And my thesis advisor was Matthew's father, and so it's like, I have to do that.
This is a live watching, so.
Are these equalities supposed to be exact or approximate?
Exact, yes. You can always do that for any system whose Hilbert space is a power of 2 dimension. You can always do this, right? Many different ways, as you presumably know. The question is, can you do that and have them be localized, right? And that's only a well-defined statement after you've taken the thermodynamic limit, right? Because if you have a finite system, it's not well-defined whether you're localized or not.
I can make these
exact even in a finite size system, many different ways, right? For any system whose Hilbert space is 2 to the n, I can do this with them exact equalities. But this is the hard part, right? And this is the non-trivial statement, which only has precise meaning in the thermodynamic limit.
I don't understand why you say that, because even if it's finite, I could write these taus as sums of products of sigmas, where sigmas are the original.
Right.
Spins. and just look at how those coefficients depend on the distance.
Right. When I say localized within this, I mean inside some envelope which falls off.
Yeah. At distance. Why does that require the thermodynamic limit?
Well, what does it mean to fall off at when I say it falls off at infinite distance to zero? You know, the envelope falls off at infinite distance. When you do a finite size system, you don't know. You don't know. You know, it could be decaying, and then it's going to go to a constant, right? At large distance, you don't know until you really have large distance. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Small question. So, is this a complete set in the sense that every eigenstate can be labeled by saying it's an eigenvalue of this?
Yeah, that.
So it's
complete. Right. And in fact, down here, that's probably the way you define the localization. Is there's a one-to-one map between a set of between these eigenstates down here and a bunch of product states with a unitary. But it only works on these states, not on these guys. Whereas over here, one local unitary will turn all these eigenstates into product states. Right? Local unitary with exponentially decaying tails. Yeah.
Is it proven that you can find these localized tails, or is it sort of the hypothesis to work with?
Okay, so John Imbrey has proven it for a certain spin chain in the way over here. So far enough from the transition, for a certain nice spin chains, it's been proven modulo one. It's kind of a funny situation. He has this proof. He has to make one assumption, which is just so obviously true that it would just be ridiculous if it was false. And he spent 2 years beating his head against the wall trying to figure out how to prove it, because it was so obviously true. It's like, and eventually he just gave up. So there's one assumption. So it's proven modulo the assumption. But when you read the assumption, it's just like this assumption. It's so obviously true. But somehow they just can't prove it. So far, nobody's proven it. But yeah, I think we should view the existence of the many-body localized phase with such operators far enough away from the transition as proof. Certainly, in this room.
Just one question, very technical question. About that assumption he made about levels not being more attractive than Ohmian, are there any counterexamples one can construct by some means?
No, it's just an absurd. The possibility of it being false is just absurd. You know, no one can even dream of a way for it to be false.
What's the assumption?
But he can't. But if this is let's not get distracted. I just wanted to assert there's a proof, but I wanted to be a little honest about it. But it's very technical, so way off topic for me. Okay, so when we talk about entanglement spread in this regime when you have these guys, so let's consider just two of these guys. So we have our spin chain here, right? And here's I, here's J. And near here we have some one of these localized pseudo spins, and we got one here, right? And now let's just look at the effective Hamiltonian of these two degrees of freedom, tau I and tau j, and let's set all the other ones in an eigenstate. So just allow, so we're now in a four-state Hilbert space where this guy can be up or down, this guy can be up or down. All the others are in some, they're frozen up or down, right? They're in an eigenstate, and they're not going to change with time because they're conserved, right? And so that Hamiltonian, what does it look like under that circumstances? It has an hi. So there's a field coupling to tau iz, and there's a field coupling to tau jz, and there's an interaction. J, tau iz, tau jz. Right? Because these guys all commute with the Hamiltonian, and they don't commute with their x and y components, the Hamiltonian doesn't contain any x or y components of these pseudospins. Otherwise, it wouldn't commute. Right, so the Hamiltonian, it's an Ising Hamiltonian. It only contains these tau z's, right? And then this Jij here falls off with distance as e to the minus rij over some length. And notice this squiggle here is not this one here, right? So this is psi, which is the localization length, which diverges at the phase transition. And this is zeta, which is a different length, which, as far as we know, does not diverge at the phase transition. And this is something people had wrong initially. It leads to contradictions if you assume. So naively, you think, oh, we have a localization length. Things are exponential in the localization length. This is what we usually assume. We've got an interaction which falls off exponentially with the length. These guys are localized with that length, and so this should fall off with the localization length. But when you do that, you get contradictions. If you let this localization length get big, the MBL phase isn't stable, you know, before it goes to infinity. So that's an important point I wanted to make. I don't know if it's been emphasized in the earlier talks here, but these are two different lengths. And this one remains finite as you go to the transition, even though this one presumably diverges, presumably with a power law. Right? So we expect, again, and we have a sort of a toy renormalization group that gives this, that the localization length does the usual thing at critical points, diverging with a power law, and it probably even satisfies the Harris inequality, which is d nu less than or equal to 2 for the case where it's random. For the case where it's quasi-periodic, maybe not. Are these two different universality classes? That's an interesting question. We don't really know.
Okay. The envelope does diverge of these tau.
Yes, right. So what happens as you approach the transition is these guys get more and more delocalized on scale psi, but when they're far apart, their interaction decays with a length scale of order 1. That seems to be the case, and I can sort of, well. Right? And so when you get, so if we start with a non-entangled state, what happens, so the spread of entanglement in the MBL phase is S goes as A, so it's area law. Right. Okay, so these two spin, right. So look at this Hamiltonian here. You know how to diagonalize this. The eigenstates are product states. Right? So there's no entanglement in the eigenstates. But if I start with an initial state where this spin is not oriented along its z-axis, and this spin is not oriented along its z-axis, then they will get entangled due to this term here, and they will get entangled at a time on a time scale, which is the inverse of this, which is exponential in the length, right? And so the entanglement spread is L goes as goes as zeta log. In effect, there's a prefactor here. Just log So this is how the entanglement spreads. The length over which it spreads grows logarithmically with time. This length scale shows up here. And then we have area law times the distance it spreads times the amount of entropy. This is now the diagonal entropy density. And then log. And so if you start in an eigenstate, the diagonal entropy is 0, and there's no spread in the entanglement because the eigenstate's it's an eigenstate, so it's time independent, and it only has area law entanglement. There's no growth. Right? And so this is of course for long time, meaning L. This is for L bigger than C. I'm talking about the long time spread of the entanglement. Okay, so if we start with an initial state with an initial product state, if it's a finite size system, yeah, it'll saturate at, right, if we're talking about the entanglement of this volume, it'll saturate, yeah, that's a good point. So it'll saturate with S goes as V. Saturate with a volume law with an entropy density given by the initial state.
Also in the MBL phase.
In the MBL phase, yeah. It saturates. Right. That's just the entanglement spreads. You know, once this length is bigger than the size of your subsystem, then the entanglement it gets as entangled as it can given the initial state, right? All the, take the initial state, express it in terms of the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian, just let it fully dephase. That's the diagonal ensemble, which has a certain entropy, and that's the entropy density we get. And this has been seen numerically. There was a nice, you know, it's sort of really brought to our attention by a nice paper from Bardersen, Holman, and Moore, like 3 years ago or so. And then this was developed. There's an important paper by Servin, Papic, and Abanin, who were the first ones to really explain this theoretically, give the picture I'm telling you. And then we also did something. He was on Kishore. Two of my main collaborators on this. So Vadim Oganessian, who's at City College, New York, City University, New York, he's the one who got me into this like 10 years ago. He told me, you got to work on these. Well, we started working on thermalization before we knew that that's what it was called. And then he said, no, we got to work on many body Lavoisier, and indebted him to getting me into this subject. Okay, and now at the critical point, all the evidence points to the same type of dynamics. So at the critical point, still L goes as some zeta C log T. Zeta C remains finite. Right? So this is, in terms of dynamic scaling, instead of a power law relation between length and time, we have this logarithmic relation, so it's dynamic exponent z equals infinity. But then at the critical point, the diagonal entropy is presumably the thermal entropy, although I guess that's not entirely clear. Okay, so that's so what I want to do next is talk about Griffiths effects.
One more question, sorry.
Yeah.
You were talking about these two length scales, zeta and xi not being equal, but to define zeta, don't I have to take my two scales to be separated by at least? But doesn't that mean that zeta must be bigger than xi?
No. I think this interaction Jij. Well, you know, this we don't really know, right? But Ji, so log Jij versus R. Okay, so inside the localization length, these operators, they're just kind of pseudo-random operators on that region, right? And so I expect it looks like this, that it's no decay, essentially, you know, no exponential decay inside the localization length, and then it's going to decay, but decay with a length scale of order 1.
You're talking about that slope.
Yeah, the slope. Right. So here there's a slope, which is, I guess, 1 over zeta. And then there's where it switches over from the critical behavior to the long distance behavior.
The prefactor then also?
No, this thing goes down exponentially. Right? Because these operators, they become extremely complicated, right? And so why would they interact? Right? You put them right on top of each other, they're sort of orthogonal commuting operators. Why should they have a strong interaction? Right, and presumably this thing goes away exponentially as C grows. But you know, this is like I say, we make up stories and we test them against exact diagonalization, which isn't much of a test. Right, so I'm just sort of telling you a story that seems consistent with what we see in the diagonalization and doesn't seem to have any internal inconsistencies. Okay, so now I want to talk about Griffiths effects. So this is Bob Griffiths, who's, I'm sure when he wrote this paper, he had no dream that this would become such a widely used term in such different contexts from his paper. And so what are these? Okay, so when we have a random system, and we're say, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to talk about here. So let's go over on the thermal side of the phase transition, but sit near the phase transition here, right? And so our system in the thermodynamic limit has average properties which put it here in the thermal phase, right? But a region of it, so Griffiths rare region effects, okay? So here's, let's talk about a one-dimensional system. Nice thing about this is, as far as we know, most of the physics in this problem happens in one dimension, which is great because it's good for drawing pictures and good for doing exact idealization. I'm going to get to one thing which is different. We found one thing so far which is different between 1D and higher dimensions, but I'm getting to. But it's not a real important difference. Okay, so we can have a patch of the system where if we look at what the disorder is in this region, it just happens to be stronger than elsewhere, putting you over here, or maybe just at the critical point, right? So what Griffiths rare region effects are local regions that would be in a different phase. If they kept the same statistics and became infinite, they'd be in a different phase. But they're not really in a different phase because they're finite, right? So there's no phase transitions in finite systems. But that's what Griffiths regions are. Okay. Now, in this problem, there's actually two types of Griffiths regions. There's rare regions in the Hamiltonian, or the unitary operator, which is what I was talking about, and that's what Griffiths was talking about. But you can also have rare regions in the state where, for the same Hamiltonian, and not in a special location on the Hamiltonian, you're in a state that happens to have an energy density that puts it in another phase. So that's a different type of Griffiths rare region effect. It's not due to the Hamiltonian, so it's not due to disorder in the Hamiltonian. It's due to the state being random. So your initial state is random, and it, you know, a thermal state, it'll have whatever fluctuations, you know, large deviations, they're there, right? So a system at equilibrium will have such fluctuations. They're exponentially rare, but they're there, right? So there's sort of two types of Griffiths regions here, which is a different thing than the normal discussions of Griffiths regions. Okay. This one...
Can I just ask one question? If you start with half the system in a thermal state, but higher energy density,
yeah,
and then the other half in an MBL, a lower energy density,
yeah,
none of the system evolves with time.
Yeah.
What happens?
Well, the thermal state will melt the MBL region, right? Because the thermal state can transport energy, and it'll transport, you know, the MBL region is colder, so the energy will go there, it'll melt the MBL region. So first of all, the discussion we're having right now only applies in this case with a Hamiltonian where we can say this, right?
Yeah.
Right? And that'll happen until either it melts the entire MBL region, and then it will thermalize, or it'll cool down to the many-body mobility edge, and then it'll run out of energy, and part of the localized phase will still remain, and then the system will be localized in a very inhomogeneous way, where one end is at the critical point, and the other end is localized. So those are two different... That's what I think will happen. Right?
Energy is not conserved?
if energy is not conserved, your initial condition doesn't exist unless, what we were arguing about yesterday, you're correct and I'm wrong. But so Matthew and I, as usual, Matthew prefers more exotic scenarios than than I do. Okay, so there's two types of Griffiths regions. So if we do have a Hamiltonian with an extensive energy, then we can have these, we can have rare regions of the state, okay, not of the Hamiltonian. And so this can occur in both the case that's random and quasi-periodic. Right. Naively, the rare regions due to randomness wouldn't occur in the quasi-periodic system because you don't have those kind of tails of the distribution. So this is one type, and then two, if random, we can have rare regions of U or H, where, and that's Griffiths regions that think they're over here, right? And this can happen even without the Hamiltonian. So with, if we have no Hamiltonian but only a unitary, we're stuck on this line, and so the only large deviations we can have are that go across the boundary are this way. Okay, now for B bigger than 1, what does it look like? Here's our system, say 2 dimensions, and we got a rare region here. So this is now an insulator. The rest is thermal, and here's another one over here, which is an insulator and it's thermal. Right? And now we're going to ask, what about entanglement spread through here or transport through here? Just go around them. It's not a problem, right? Okay, so they can't block the dynamics. Right? In order to block the dynamics, you'd have to have a Great Wall of China here, and that happens. You know, the probability of that is exponentially small in the size of the system. So in the thermodynamic limit, they're not there. Right? Okay, so here we expect the entanglement dynamics to spread like area law times some velocity times time. Because it should just move at some Lieb-Robinson velocity. Right? And it'll just go around these guys if they're there. They're not a problem. And presumably this V goes to 0 at the transition. All right, so as we approach the transition, over here, the spreading speed presumably goes to 0. So it can match on to the lack of linear dynamics of spreading at the critical point in the many body roll applied states. Okay. But in 1B, you can't go around it. As you know, since you guys live in California and drive on roads. Right, so in 1D, so now we've got this insulator here, and this is thermal. Right, and say this Griffiths region is of length L. So these guys of length L occur with density going as e to the minus something times L. Right? You know, in order to have a rare region of length L, you have to have an unusual deviation of the disorder happening across the whole system, and so it, the probability decays exponentially with the length. It's a streak, a losing streak or something. And this C goes to zero at the transition. Because if you're at the transition, then you know, you don't have to do anything unusual. The transition. And so if we're, okay. And then time to, let me put it this way, tunnel across. Right, so this is an insulator. So to get across here, you got a tunnel. Just entanglement, right? But entanglement has to get across it, and you can talk about entanglement tunneling across an insulator. I hope people are comfortable with me saying that. That's the way we think about it. Okay, and the time will go as E, it'll go exponential in the length. In fact, it will go like L over something like this zeta. It's not necessarily the same zeta as comes in here, but it, you know, it has to do with what's the interaction between this end and this end, right? For stuff to get across, right? And so naively, that might be the same as this length, although maybe not, because this is more like a T2, a dephasing length, whereas this is more like a T1 dissipation length, so there might be two different lengths. But they're both presumably of order one at the critical point. Otherwise, we get contradictions. Okay. Right. So on time t, blockages have spacing or density, right? So we just take this and plug it in up here. Right, okay, so this is density, so therefore spacing, typical spacing, e to the plus c times l, right? And so that goes as t to the c zeta. If I take t and put it to the c zeta, I get that, which is the spacing between these guts, how far apart it is. So if we're looking on time scale t, and we're close to the transition, the dynamics is dominated by these blockages, and you just have to ask how many of them are there, how far apart are the traffic jams. And so this is how, this is the scaling you get in this Griffiths regime near the critical point on the thermal side. L goes as t to the zeta, or we could write it as t, the more traditional thing to write it is the time scale goes at the length to the dynamic exponent z. All right? And now this c goes to zero at the transition, so z goes to infinity at the transition. Which is nice, because it matches nicely onto my assertion that at the transition, z is infinity. The power law gets an arbitrary large power, which can match on nicely to an exponential law. Right? Okay, so this is what happens. So let me just get this right. Right, so this is if... So far enough... from the transition, this z will go to less than 1. And so more generally, what you have is that the length scale over which the entanglement spreads goes like the minimum of something like this, vt, or t to the 1 over z due to the Griffiths. So this would be due to the Griffiths effects if the blockages are dominant, and this would just be if the blockages are a small correction to just the standard propagation of entanglement like people talk about in non-random systems. Okay, so that's something about the dynamics. Should I... pretty much out of time.
You can take a couple of camera minutes.
Okay. Okay, so let me just, and this, right, let me just mention some names here. So this business here about this slow dynamics, this is there's a paper from Harvard, Agarwal, Bimler, Gopalakrishnan, and then we've developed a toy renormalization group, which I'm going to tell you a little bit about, which also gives these effects. Voskues-Altman. Ehud Altman and Weissman and his student, Ronen Vosk. Okay, so this, say a little bit about what we're up to. Strong disorder, RG, for the 1D ETH / MBL transition. Okay, so what? So we developed a renormalization group. There's a lot of assumptions that go into it, but I'm just going to sort of give you maybe an overview of what we're doing and some of the assumptions. Okay, so it's specific to 1D, and we're thinking about the random case. So random case, not the quasi-periodic case. And it's basic. Well, the strong disorder RG is an approach that works, particularly in one-dimensional quantum systems, with disorder. And the renormalization group flows to strong disorder fixed points where the randomness is broad on a log scale, which that gives a small parameter which controls the strong disorder RG. And this can be very successful. Daniel Fisher showed how it's really fully under control 20 years ago for various spin chains. And so we're trying to make that work for this problem. Okay, so it's not a traditional renormalization group where you integrate out degrees of freedom and go to a smaller Hilbert space or a smaller state space, but rather we just describe the system with a smaller number of parameters, but keep the full Hilbert space, because that's important in this problem, right? When the system thermalizes, it uses its whole Hilbert space, right? If you took away some of its Hilbert space, it wouldn't be able to thermalize, right, properly, right? And so obviously you can't be taking away states. At least it seems obvious. That's what we're doing, is not taking away states, okay? So we have this chain here, and the idea is that if we're near the critical point, some regions, the local disorder is going to be put them on one side, and those regions will be thermal-like, and other regions, the local disorder will put it on the other side, and those regions will look insulating-like locally, right? And so we have blocks. I, which has, right, and so we'll have a bunch of blocks, right, and the idea is we let these blocks grow. So we don't integrate them out, but we combine blocks into bigger blocks. Okay, so we have a block of length I, which is a piece of the chain, which we've chosen to put a boundary here and here and call this a block and describe it. Okay. So then we take an assumption where each block, and this is sort of the where we may be throwing out some of the physics, so we haven't really figured out anything we've thrown out. Each block is captured by two parameters. So we're going to have a block which is itself is a long many-body system with a great big Hilbert space, and we're going to describe it with two parameters, right? And that's obviously, if that's safe, that's Well, that's the way RGs work. It means the RG could work, but we're making the leap of faith that we can do this and it's okay. Okay, and there's no strong justification like you would normally want for a controlled RG, like Daniel Fisher did for his case, or for Cuspidus thallus, or epsilon expansion, or something like that, where there really is a small parameter, you can really make the argument. So this is more like pre-Wilson RG, you know, where people were just doing it on the seat of their pants, right? Kadanoff style. Okay, so two parameters. Okay, so one of the, so this block is of length Li. One of the parameters is clear and important, which is the level spacing, many-body level spacing. So delta I, and that's just e to the minus s L sub I. So of its full Hilbert, so this is the entropy of the, this is the entropy density of the system at the conditions we're talking about. Typically, we're thinking of a spin chain or one of these unitary operators if it's got a Hamiltonian, we're at infinite temperature. So it's really just the full Hilbert space. So this is just 1 over the dimension of the Hilbert space. In principle, there's a bandwidth in front here, but you know, we're worried about the exponentials. This isn't an exponential. Okay, so if we had this block all by itself and diagonalized it, it would have a spectrum and it would have this level spacing. And so here, already, we get z equals infinity scaling. So if we assume that this is an important parameter in the problem, that's, right, we've got a rate, an inverse angular energy, which is an inverse time, which goes exponentially in the length. So we have z equals infinity scaling. So we're sort of, by saying this is an important parameter, which is, you know, going to be a relevant parameter for the block at the fixed point, where we're sort of putting in that assumption. Okay. Right, and generally this is 2 to the minus L if we're talking about a spin a half chain with L spins in the block. Okay. And then we have another parameter, gamma I, which is the rate for end-to-end thermalization, or we could say entanglement. And it's not clear what's the best way of defining this, but certainly one way of thinking about it is to say, take my block, here it is of length L sub I, couple it over here to a good reservoir, it's very thermal, here's my block, and then measure the spectral function here at this end, right? Now, the block all by itself has this level spacing. This setup here will broaden those levels by this amount. Okay. If you're in the localized phase, you take the limit of a large block, this goes down faster than this, and the spectrum remains discrete. You have to tunnel through. Whereas if you're in the thermal phase, this guy is bigger than this guy. The lines broaden. You get a continuum spectrum because the system itself, right, you put a reservoir here, but that actually wasn't important because the system itself was a reservoir. Well, it is important because it takes the discrete spectrum with this spacing and broadens it into a true continuum. Right? So the I blocks, insulating blocks, are the ones with delta I greater than gamma I, and then the thermalizing blocks are with delta I less than gamma I. And so then we just take a chain and we have I blocks and T blocks. We go in there, we find the fastest block, which for an I, so for the I blocks, we ask, how long does it take to tunnel across it? And for the T blocks, we ask, what's the level spacing? Right. And the RG basically goes in, finds the fastest block, combines it with its neighbors in the appropriate way, right? And so a typical situation is you have, well, if an I block is next to an I block, you just combine them and you have to tunnel through both of them. And if a T block is next to a T block, you just combine them into a T block and, you know, level spacing goes up. But a typical situation that is non-trivial, you have an I block next to a T block, right? This guy, you have to, right? So there's two possibilities. One is the thermal block thermalizes the I block, right? If this guy can serve as a bath and can entangle all the way across to the other end of this guy, and then there's another T block over here, then we can make a move that become a T block, right? The other possibility is if it can't, this guy all by itself has a discrete level spacing with this spacing, right? And if the tunneling across here to this reservoir and the tunneling across here to this reservoir is weaker than this level spacing, these levels remain discrete and sharp. They don't bend into a continuum. And when we go down to that energy scale, this guy looks insulating, no longer looks like a continuum. And so we would put these two together into an I block. There's a lot of assumptions which go into making up these rules, but you can build such an RG, you can run it on the computer, and it does get fixed points. It does give power law, C going as G minus GC to the minus nu. We've been playing around with different versions of it, and so far, you know, the news we get vary, so it seems like it's sensitive to the specifics of the assumptions we make, right? And we're trying to make sense of that, right? So, you know, it's sort of, the whole thing smells like we're on the right track. It's giving the physics, all seems pretty reasonable, but it's early days for the enterprise. Okay, I'll stop there.
So this 2D picture you drew suggests that close to the critical point you could do some kind of perfluid treatment of the entanglement spreading. Is that fruitful though?
Not clear. Sort of, you know, all phase transitions, in some sense, you can think about them percolatively. Often that's not a productive direction to look at. But for this one, I don't know. You know, it's certainly something we think about. You know, it's a possibility.
You know, so these tau operators, right? They have sort of exponential base in the MBL phase. If you understand what I mean by that?
Yeah.
So can you see what kind of base they have at the critical point? Is it like power loss, the decay of these tau states?
Yeah, we don't know. I would guess they have, right? Of course, it's in the random system, they're going to be in an enormous variety.
Yeah.
And so one of the issues is as you approach the critical point, do some of the taus actually remain localized with a localization length of order 1, and then other ones get really big, and it gets enormously inhomogeneous? And that's, I think, a possibility, right? These Griffiths effects, so there's Griffiths effects coming from the other side, so there are definitely anomalously delocalized taus, which represent the Griffiths domains of a region that really thought it was in the other phase. And so, when you have these strong disorder critical points, you get very broad distribution. So my suspicion is it's an enormously broad distribution, and it may actually have a weight of order 1 with localized on scale of order 1, right? So it might be really as broad as it could be.
So then you get like a whole Griffiths phase where you have coexistence of completely delocalized.
Yeah, well, that's again the question. You know, at the critical point, does it really look inhomogeneous where there's thermal regions and then really localized regions which have localization length locally of order 1, even though you're right at the critical point, right? And that would be when, like, a percolation picture might actually be appropriate, right? And I think this is definitely a possibility here. Now, we sort of see hints of it in this RG that it actually might be what happens. So that shows up if you have an eye block in your bear system and you run the RG and it remains an eye block all the way, that means it never got thermalized by anybody, right? And its localization length is presumably of order one. And it looks, in at least some of the versions of the RG where we've looked, that a finite fraction of the system, even as you approach epsilon from the critical point, remains like that. So there may actually be almost a first order aspect of it. Right? You can have, it's not really a first order aspect. You can have continuous phase transitions where the order parameter exponent beta is zero, right? So the order parameter has a discontinuity even though there's a divergent correlation length. And so this might be of that type. The order parameter here would be, in some sense, the local magnetization of the frozen tau. Right? You know, the tau, its projection onto a bare variable is like an order parameter. You know, as they delocalize, that goes to zero. But if a finite fraction of them remain localized on length scale one, even up to the critical point, then the order parameter could remain non-zero and then just jump discontinuously to zero. Right? And I'm thinking that might be a possibility. But this is, it's a phase transition. It's of a new type. We're using the tools that for the old type of phase transitions, which maybe it has some properties that. We need to invent something new. So we don't know a lot about it.
Any other questions? I have a question. Just to some of the question that was clarifying. So this Griffiths picture is consistent with z-squared infinity, but it's not required. In high dimension infinity, you can still have z-squared infinity without going to the sun.
Yeah. Well, okay, so there's another Griffiths story, which is in a paper with Sarangopala Pillakrishnan and collaborator, where you do the Griffiths starting from the localized phase and ask, what about an island that's thermalizing? And that gives a Griffiths exponent, and in one dimension and higher dimensions are the same. And it matches on nicely at the critical point, right? So I think that's that. You don't need to have a Griffiths exponent z which goes continuously to infinity to have z equals infinity at the critical point. It's not necessary.
There are more questions.